Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The big uproar this week has been accusations against President Trump and his phone call to the Ukrainian president in regard to Biden and Biden's son's corrupt dealings. I'm going to address that topic next week when some of the circus dies down. This week's program is about climate change. At the beginning of September, the 2020 candidates conducted a climate crisis town hall. And I've had a few requests to again address this whole issue of the climate change hysteria. In the spring, when the Congresswoman AOC came out with her new Green Deal, that was another opportunity to address the climate change movement, but I ignored it because I've done at least four programs addressing the ideological, theological errors of this movement, and it's like beating a dead horse, as the old saying goes, except the old horse isn't dead yet. Global warming, the climate change movement is the monster that just won't die. It's like the Night of the Living Dead, where the dead just keep coming back to life. It's like the Terminator. You destroy him and he comes back together from all of the pieces. So here's the short of it. Apparently there has been a degree or two of warming over this last century. The measurements are debatable. But the Earth has always had these warming spells and these cooling spells. There was the Roman warming period from 250 BC to 400 AD. Then there was a period of warming in the Middle Ages from about 900 to 1300. It was during this time that the Vikings were able to settle Iceland and Greenland. And there were reports of bountiful vineyards in England. So for this century, there has been a slight increase of a degree or two. No big deal. And over the last 15 years, there has been no increase in temperature, a hiatus in global warming. Climate alarmists are trying to disprove that fact because it goes against their narrative, but the hiatus is real. Well, despite the facts, we are hearing that we only have 11 years left. And at this Democratic climate change town hall, a young lady asked, what are we going to do since we only have 11 years to get off of fossil fuels in order to have a safe, livable future? And this is what Congresswoman Cortez said, quote, the world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. Well, where does that number come from? Well, back in 2018, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report that stated the planet will reach a critical threshold of 2.7 degree Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels by as early as 2030, precipitating a risk of extreme drought, wildfires, floods, and food shortages for hundreds of millions of people. So, if the average temperature rises a degree or two over the last century, it will mean a worldwide disaster. And we're supposed to believe this. So with this report, climate alarmists started making predictions and policy proposals because we only have until 2030 until disaster. For example, Andrew King, a lecturer in climate science at the University of Melbourne, said, this is concerning because we know that there are so many more problems if we exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming, including more heat waves and hot summers, greater sea level rise, and for many parts of the world, drought and rainfall extremes. Global net emissions of carbon dioxide would need to fall by 45% from 2010 levels by 2030 and reach net zero by 2050. In order to keep the warming around 1.5 degrees Celsius. Lower emissions to this degree, while technically possible, would require widespread changes in energy, industry, building, transportation, cities, the report says. So this is why AOC came out with this radical New Green Deal in order to save the planet. And this is why all of these Democrat candidates are saying we need to get off of fossil fuels, no more gasoline motors and cars. We have to stop the average temperature of the planet from rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius, so we have to stop producing CO2. So with all this talk that we only have 11 years left, I can't wait until 2030, because everything will be the same as today, and the climate change deniers will be able to say, see, we told you so. And finally, this will be an end to the whole climate change movement, but don't hold your breath. When we get to 2030, the alarmists are going to move the goalpost to 2050, because this is not about facts. This is not about science. This is about a religion. This is about an ideology. This is about a political agenda. Back in 1992, the Rio Climate Summit released a statement that the world only had 10 years to get climate change under control. Well, 2002 came and went, and we're all doing just fine. Nothing changed. Now, last week, there were a number of articles on the web listing all of the failed climate predictions over the last 50 years, from world starvation to the next ice age to the Arctic not having any more ice by 2019, and none of these predictions came true, not even in part. So you'd think by this point, the whole climate change movement would have been exposed as a hoax, or at the very least, bad science. In fact, depending on which survey you look at, the public is gradually turning against the global warming movement. It's starting to be ridiculed, because you can fool all the people some of the time, and some of the people all the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all the time. Because eventually, reality exposes the lie. Whether that be the lie of the sexual revolution, or feminism, or communism, or transgenderism, eventually the promises don't come true. There isn't peace and happiness. Time exposes the lie, and time actually works against the devil. He has to act quickly. Because breaking God's law always results in long-term negative consequences. In the short term, you might be able to get away with an erroneous worldview, but never in the long term. Psalm chapter 9, verse 17, the wicked will return to hell and all nations who forget God. So, climate alarmists have a real problem. Their predictions are not coming true. There are no dramatic spikes in temperature. There are no extraordinary weather disasters. Sea levels are not rising more than in any other century. Don't even listen to these doomsday preachers who are saying that there are more earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes today, which is a sign of the end. That's simply not true. Now, some thinkers have suggested that what we're seeing is the end of the climate change movement. This is the radicalism that arises when a movement is about ready to die. Here's an editorial from the Wall Street Journal. Climate change has run its course. Its ascent into social justice identity politics is the last gasp of a cause that has lost its vitality. Before a trend or a movement dies, the proponents get desperate. They become extreme in order to maintain the momentum that they expect. Notice that the movement is getting so desperate that they're turning to children for support. They can't get adults to believe it, so they're going after the children. And these are all signs that the movement is dying, and these are actions that help bury the movement. Now, I just heard a historian point out that in the 1970s, the Soviet Union celebrated the 100th birthday of Lenin. And they made such a fuss about it, and they made such an idol of Lenin, that it actually awakened the Russian population to the propaganda of the Communist Party. And so the Soviet celebration of Lenin's 100th birthday was actually the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union. Well, that assessment might be true. We might be seeing the end of the global warming climate change movement, or it could be that we're just going to be seeing more polarization. where one half of the American public becomes diehard skeptics, and the other half doubles down on their belief in climate change. There are entrenched climate change believers who may hold to this alarmist for a long time to come. And it might even play into how the world and the world leaders someday view the disasters of the apocalypse spoken of in the book of the Revelation. You know, they will look at these disasters not as being supernatural, but as the result of man-made global warming, naturalism, or environmentalism may be the world's crusade during the apocalypse, a distraction from the moral issue, the conflict with God. You know, environmentalism, the worship of Mother Earth, is the oldest religion on Earth. It was addressed by the Old Testament prophets. It is the classic deceptive substitute for God's truth. Romans chapter 1, verse 25. People exchange the truth of God for a lie, and they worship and serve the creation rather than the creator. So last Friday, I decided to take my bike and take a ride through Manhattan, and lucky me, I came across a climate change protest in Battery Park. The climate change movement called upon children to walk out of school to protest climate change, and the mayor of New York let them do this. You know, I texted my wife about the protests, and she responded with a good question. Who or what are they protesting? That's a question that you're not supposed to ask. It's dangerous when you start to think. So I'm guessing there was about 10,000 in attendance. Battery Park is quite small. So here are these rich, spoiled Manhattan parents with their children, mostly with little girls. They have their iPhones. They have their designer clothing made of nylon that comes from oil. They have their sneakers, all made from oil. They live in comfortable buildings, heated and cooled with oil. You know, it's just this old principle that people eventually attack the very source of their blessing. They'll despise their own prosperity and success. And of course, the whole thing is a package deal of fault finders and grievance seekers. With the climate change activists, there were the anti-capitalists, communists shouting on their bullhorns, workers of the world unite, down with big money, capitalism is the cause of global warming. It was like I was transported back to a Bolshevik revolution in 1917. It was surreal. You can see in this picture a poster, "Kill Capitalism, Not the Planet." And in the background, the sign reads, "The system cannot be reformed. It must be overthrown." Then there were also the vegans protesting. And I was puzzled by one sign that said, "Animal consumption is the main cause of climate change." And it must be due to the dangers of cow flatulence, which was referred to in the Green New Deal. The whole thing was sad. And what was really sad was that so many children were being sold this hysteria. Look at this one sign. The girl has a picture of President Trump saying, "Climate change, where?" And the Statue of Liberty is underwater. Now, the Statue of Liberty is not underwater, so how does this make Trump look naive? It demonstrates the irrationality of the person holding the sign. And here's a girl holding a sign, "We are burning." Really? It was a very cool summer this year in New York City, and it was a very cool day in New York City at the protest. But the narrative actually becomes reality in the minds of these people. And again, have you noticed that the left is putting up children to promote the climate change movement? They're making this teenager, Greta Thunberg, their spokesperson. And this is the same human shield strategy used by Islamic extremists. They hide behind children, so if you attack them, you're accused of attacking children. It's unprincipled, but that's this whole movement. And here's an interesting article from the Washington Post about how, quote, "The crowds of people who took to the streets Friday to demand aggressive measures against climate change were unlike any seen. They were young, they were diverse, and they were overwhelmingly girls. Something different is happening here, the University of Maryland sociologist said. We have a new wave of contention in society that's being led by women. And the youth climate movement is leading this new generational shift. And that's what I saw at this protest. The majority were girls. And my guess is that since women and girls are physically the weaker gender, they're more susceptible to fearing things outside their control. Anyway, I stayed for a few minutes and listened to the speeches. And as I expected, I heard this is the single most important issue. We only have 11 years left. What we do today about climate change determines whether we live or die. And we need to address climate change with the moral clarity of children. And yes, the speeches were just that. Juvenile hysterics, emotionalism, sensationalism. One of the speakers actually screamed to let out her frustrations. So the whole thing was embarrassing. But it's a reminder of how easily the Antichrist will someday be able to delude the masses, especially those people who are biblically illiterate, unprincipled, and emotionally based. Anyway, savvy politicians know that the climate change issue is not going to win them the 2020 election. Although a radical minority in the Democrat base want to make a big issue, it turns off too many voters. Votes that they need to win. So the DNC decided not to have a climate change debate with the candidates. However, CNN decided to thwart that decision and host its own climate change town hall. And it was 7 hours long. It was a complete disaster for the Democrat Party. It was not only so boring, it was unwatchable. It exposed all of the radicalism of the Democrat candidates. The candidates made in-record statements concerning what they believe and what they want to do. What they have not been willing to say publicly came out in the open, and it was a Luke chapter 12 moment. But there's nothing covered up that will not be revealed and hidden that will not be made known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light. And what you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. So the RNC put together a montage of statements from the Democrat candidates. The Democrats provided some great PR for the Republican Party. I just want you to hear this clip just to get a sense of what I am referring to.
This is on par with winning World War II. Would you ban offshore drilling?
Absolutely yes.
Banning certain behaviors. Do you ban plastic straws?
I think we should.
Do you ban fracking?
Absolutely yes.
The export of fossil fuels from the United States, would you ban that?
Absolutely, we must get to that point.
We can do that. Just on public lands.
No.
We can undo by executive action.
I have a real priority at the highest level of government.
Prohibit the permitting of oil and gas leasing on public lands.
You go after them, you try to change the law.
We're going to have to spend a lot of federal money.
Get rid of the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal.
Yes, to reduce red meat specifically.
Yes.
In the same way that we have taxed cigarettes, we're going to have to tax carbon.
We need to say that those who are throwing the carbon into the air that the rest of us have to breathe, that the rest of us have to deal with, are the ones who are responsible for paying.
Do you support a carbon tax?
Yeah, no, I would.
I will not approve any plans for the use of federal lands that are near tribal lands to our Native American brothers and sisters.
I love the vision of the Green New Deal. To me, the only issue I have with the Green New Deal is the timing of the timeline.
File lawsuits against polluters.
Do you propose setting aside half of American land and oceans for wildlife, for biodiversity?
Human population growth has more than doubled in the past 50 years. The planet cannot sustain this growth.
Yes. And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions, especially in poor countries around the world. Where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies.
Let's talk in language that is understood across the heartland. God is watching. I bet he thinks
it's messed up, that it's a kind of sin.
One of the reasons I love the framing of the Green New Deal is it uses some of the language that we might associate with the way that we met the response of Nazi Germany.
Oh, I guess it's 11 years that we have left. It was
the Syrian Civil War is one of the first that was partly caused as a consequence of climate change.
This is one of the pernicious outcomes of Donald Trump's trade policies, this trade war with China.
This is the hardest thing we will have done, certainly in my lifetime as a country. This is on par with winning World War II, perhaps even more challenging than that.
Right? It is an existential threat. There is no doubt about that. The fact of the matter is that we make up 15% of the problems.
People who are poor, communities of color, take the brunt of storms that are getting more frequent. That's the environmental injustice and racism that we're dealing with.
So I would convene a geoengineering summit and get countries from around the world to make sure that we don't have rogue actors just going off on their own. So first, geoengineering is not the primary approach at all. We have to reduce emissions.
You are holding a high-dollar fundraiser hosted by Andrew Goldman, a fossil fuel executive.
He is not a fossil fuel executive.
A guy named Andrew Goldman, and their biggest project is a floating liquefied facility for natural gas.
I didn't realize he does that. And you think I'm kidding. It's almost not there now.
I want to go over some of the outrageous statements made at this climate change town hall. But first, let me review some facts. I've covered this subject extensively, and I hate to repeat myself, but here are the facts to consider when you're speaking to individuals about this whole movement. CO2 makes up a very small portion of our atmosphere. If you ask some people, they think it makes up 40%. But no, oxygen is only 21%, and nitrogen is 78%. The remaining 1% of our atmosphere is other gases, argon, methane, ozone, and CO2. Carbon dioxide, CO2, is not 4%. It is not 0.4%. It is 0.04% of our atmosphere. And it appears over the last 100 years, the amount of CO2 in our atmosphere has gone from 0.03% to 0.04%. It may be due to the burning of fossil fuels, but it is still a minuscule amount. And plant life recycles CO2 out of the atmosphere. This is how plants survive. If there is no CO2, all plant life on Earth will die. There is more danger of a lack of CO2 in the atmosphere than an increase. CO2 levels right now are at 400 parts per million, but plant growth shuts down at 150 parts per million. CO2 is the best fertilizer we can create for a green Earth. And the more CO2 that's produced, the more plants will grow. And there will always be an equilibrium of CO2, and CO2 will never take over the atmosphere. Now, what climate alarmists are alleging is that since CO2 is a heavier molecule than oxygen or nitrogen, it will significantly trap sunlight energy more than those other gases. Well, maybe. But again, the increase of CO2 is minuscule, from 300 parts per million to 400 parts per million. And who is to say that a degree or two of warming might not be a good thing? But the claim of these alarmists is that the Earth is very fragile. And that's the basis for this movement. Notice this editorial by Walter Williams getting at the heart of the issue, entitled, "Our Planet is Not Fragile." You see, global warming activists have a prior belief that any human activity will create a domino disaster effect. But this is all based upon predictions, not hard science. So far, we have not seen any of these predicted disasters. And again, no, there has not been more severe weather conditions due to global warming. In the town hall, Cory Booker claimed, if we do not solve this crisis, we are going to see weather events like we've seen for the last 5 years, from fire to flood to the storms. We have to prepare. But that's all just coming from tabloid news. Serious sources show that the averages for natural disasters have not changed. But if you believe the climate change ideology, it's easy to attribute any bad weather to man-made climate change. Now, you've probably heard that this last July was the warmest on record. Europe had a heat wave, but it was very cool here in the Northeast, and it was relatively cool in Eastern Europe and Russia. I also want to point out something that's interesting concerning these global warming charts. According to NASA, Goddard's Institute, average global temperatures have risen 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880. But notice something about the y-axis on these charts. The increments on the y-axis are very small. And that gives the impression that there are these huge spikes in temperature. But if the y-axis is calibrated by degrees, not by fractions of degrees, the line over the last 100 years is relatively flat. I just want to point out how presentation can be ideological propaganda. Now, everything I've just shared here is not biblical revelation. It's natural revelation. This program is about biblical revelation. But the Bible doesn't tell us about the laws of gravity, the laws of physics. We learn those truths from natural revelation. And natural revelation is also God's truth. But just in the same way, people will reject written revelation, the Bible, if it goes against their preferred worldview, people will also reject sound natural revelation if it goes against their preferred worldview. The measurements from natural revelation have shown that there has been no global warming in the last 15 years, no climate disasters. Yet still, the climate change movement is alive and well for ideological reasons. And this is seen in the recent climate change crisis town hall. Amazingly, all of these Democrats are on board with this movement. You know, a whole program could be dedicated to explain why conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats differ in regard to climate change. It has something to do with how conservatives and liberals respond differently to fear-based appeals. It has something to do with how they think differently concerning the role of government. But that's all a program for another time. Let's just look at some of the statements from these Democratic candidates at this town hall. Julian Castro was asked, "What will you do to stop environmental racism?" Now, this is another example of how critical theory attempts to make everything about racism, about oppression. The idea is that the destruction of the environment is a subconscious way that white people oppress people of color. Castro also went on to speak about how we need to get climate change education into our public schools. Quote, "It's essential if we're going to raise a generation of Americans that will do right by our planet, making the little decisions in life that will ensure that we get to net zero." It isn't about getting the Bible, God's truth, into public schools, but the gospel of climate change. And this is one of the great errors in the climate change movement. It acts as a false substitute, a way to direct people away from the real moral crisis in the world. While the Old Testament prophets spoke against pollution, the main issue was moral pollution. Isaiah 24:5, "The earth is also polluted by its inhabitants." Too much CO2? No, for they have transgressed laws, violated statutes, broke the everlasting covenant. The secularists make the emphasis, the physical pollution, sin against the environment. Even Castro said, "We must do right by our planet." Our planet is a rock, not a moral person. You cannot do right by a rock unless you believe in some sort of pantheism. President Obama said in the past, "Our planet faces new challenges, but none pose a greater threat to future generations than climate change." None pose a greater threat. That's not what God says. The Christian worldview is moral sin against a holy God is the greatest threat to humanity. And this is the great error in the climate change movement. Even if global warming were true, it is getting the wrong emphasis. The movement is a false gospel with a false definition of the problem of sin and a false solution or a false salvation. Pete Buttigieg said, "If you believe God is watching as poison is being belched into the air of creation and people are being harmed by it, countries are at risk of vanishing in low-lying areas, what do you think God thinks of that? At least one way of talking about this is it is a kind of sin." Yet Buttigieg says nothing about the sin of his homosexual lifestyle. So again, the climate change movement rejects the weightier matters of the law. It strains out a gnat and swallows a camel. Joe Biden's response. The Pentagon sat down and gave us a briefing of the great dangers we face in security. You know what they told us? Climate change, climate change. The single greatest concern for war and disruption in this world, short of nuclear exchange. So, where are we? Look at what happened in Darfur. What's Darfur all about? Darfur is all about the fact that the sub-Saharan desert, because of changing climate, no longer has enough arable land. Unquote. Hundreds of thousands of people died in Darfur over ethnic cleansing. It was a moral problem. But Biden is following the secular, liberal, Darwinistic view that man's sin is caused by environmental factors. Not man's moral corruption, not his false ideology, not his choice to do evil, but it's the environment that causes us to do bad things. And this is a pagan view of sin and salvation, that the suffering in the world is due to the fact that we're disobeying Mother Earth. You know, it reminds me of the tweet that the New York Times put out on 9/11, that airplanes took aim and brought down the World Trade Center. See, the left wants to avoid addressing the moral agency of man, the responsibility of moral choice, so they blame the environment, they blame inanimate objects for evil. Bernie Sanders had the most outrageous response to climate change, that we need to practice eugenics, abortion, to stop global warming. He spoke as a true communist ideologue. A woman asked Sanders, "Human population growth has more than doubled in the past 50 years. The planet cannot sustain this growth. I realize this is a poisonous topic for politicians, but it is crucial to face. Empowering women and educating everyone on the need to curb population growth seems a reasonable campaign to enact. Would you be courageous enough to discuss this issue and make it a key feature of a plan to address climate catastrophe?" Sanders responds, "Well, Martha, the answer is yes. And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions." The audience applauds. So Sanders believes abortion is part of the solution to climate change. Then Sanders says that the Mexico City Agreement, which denies American aid to those organizations around the world that allow women to have abortions or even get involved in birth control, to me is totally absurd. So Sanders thinks that it's not just unwise, it's not just unhelpful, but it's totally absurd that the United States does not fund organizations that wants to kill babies in the womb to keep population down. So this is 20th century progressive eugenics. It's still alive and well in 2019. So I could go on and on and take apart many of the quotes made at this climate change crisis town hall. But let me conclude with just one thought here. All of this is good. Venues like this, this crazy election season, is all part of God's plan. These world leaders mean it for evil, but God means it for good. The lesson in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. This is an Isaiah chapter 10 lesson, where the national leaders have one intent, but God uses it for another. This town hall exposed the agenda of the left. It recorded statements that will forever be replayed. Imagine what these young people involved in this climate change protest will think in 11 years. They'll be in college, they'll be in their 20s, and the world will not be destroyed by climate change. And they'll have to admit that the system lied to them, that the left lied to them. Now, not all young people will see this, but a few will. And it's the few who, seeing the lies of the world, will be motivated to turn to Christ. The more these leftist leaders talk, the more they expose, the more people will see the difference between the kingdom of God and the kingdom of this world, the kingdom of Satan. And that's the purpose. That is why God is allowing Satan to parade his people and his beliefs on this world stage. Evil serves the purpose of exposing what a godless world would look like. In the garden, imagine if Satan came to Eve and said, I want you to divorce your husband. I want you to become a feminist. I want you to kill the child in your womb. I want you to have sex with other women. I want you to smoke grass. I want you to degrade yourself. He would not have been very convincing. So he hid his true agenda and simply said, God wants to keep you down. When Satan's true agenda is exposed, it awakens those who have an affinity for the truth. I recently read an interesting salvation testimony from Sarah Irving Stonebreaker, senior lecturer in modern European history at Western Sydney University in Australia. The testimony is entitled, How Oxford and Peter Singer Drove Me from Atheism to Jesus. Remember Peter Singer? He's that leftist professor who teaches that not only should we abort unwanted babies in the womb, but we should abort unwanted 2- and 3-year-olds. So Sarah writes, I remember leaving Singer's lecture with a strange intellectual vertigo. I was committed to believing that universal human values was more than just a well-meaning conceit of liberalism. But I knew from my own research in the history of European empires and their encounter with indigenous cultures that societies have always had different conceptions of human worth or lack thereof. The premise of human equality is not a self-evident truth. It is profoundly historically contingent. I began to realize that the implications of my atheism were incompatible with almost every value I held dear. And so she started studying the Bible, and she came to faith in Christ. How Oxford and Peter Singer drove me from atheism to Jesus. Now, it's true that many people will hear the agenda of Satan and the Antichrist, and they will love it all the more. But those who are called of God, those who are of the truth, seeing the darkness, will come to the light. And that's the plan of God. Our world is a stage in which two kingdoms are presented before you. And my prayer is that you would be like the wise man in Proverbs 27, who, when seeing the evil, departs from it. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to put together a program about some of the spiritual lessons in this Ukrainian phone call, debacle, impeachment crisis. Also, I need to make some comments or do a program about the president's speech at the UN. That was a very significant event. Keep open to all that God is teaching us through these world events. And may God richly bless you as you continue to live by the Word of God.